My talk has changed just a little bit. I'm talking about host-associated encapsulation capacity of orgioloco-stigma. I'm focusing on one particular species in the assemblage I work on. Host diet is an important factor in the fitness of insect herbivores, and that can be many aspects of host diet, including things like quality, nutritional value of that host plant, host plant species, so it can be, fitness can vary from species to species, and there can be indirect effects from the third trophic level, things like parasitism and predation that may vary from host plant to host plant. But polyphagous herbivores, generalist herbivores, may have some unique challenges that face them in this aspect. There may be limited coevolution with the species that the herbivore eats, in the sense that they don't have a long-standing history with every plant that they're eating, and so they haven't adapted to every plant that they're eating. There may be sensitivity to defensive compounds. So although these generalists may adapt to common secondary compounds that are on the plants that they feed upon, if there are any unique defensive compounds, they have not been able to adapt to those specific compounds, and so they may be more sensitive to them. And we have seen differential performance on different host species. So they may have different development rates or pupil mass depending on the host plant that they're feeding on. Significant differential parasitism of generalist herbivores feeding on different host plants has been found in a Lill et al. Study, as well as studies in our own lab by Barbosa and colleagues, has shown differential parasitism depending on the host plant that they're feeding on. So this was a study done back on 2001, and it was species collected over a period of 5 years on both box elder and black willow in Maryland forests. And what you can see here is that regardless of the time of the season, so we have percent parasitism here on the y-axis, regardless of the time of season, box elder parasitism levels are higher across the season. And you can see these numbers here on the top of each of these columns represent the number of species that were surveyed in this study. Also done in a 2004 study, they looked at percent parasitism. And what I want you to focus on is these species up here. So this is the abundance of these species. So if we look at the most abundant species here, Zale galvanata, it's a noctuid, Semiothyza amulitaria, which is now Macaria amulitaria, and Orgioleucostigma, this is our little focal species here. These were the top parasitized and also the most abundant species in our study. But what I want you to notice is that Orgioleucostigma of those three is the only generalist, and that's the one that we're focusing on in this study. But although we see this differential parasitism, the mechanisms behind it are still unclear to us. We're not sure why that differential parasitism exists. So there have been potential hypotheses or mechanisms that have been proposed and were set forth very eloquently in a Lill et al. Paper that might be the reasons behind this differential parasitism. So plant volatiles could differ from plant to plant, and those volatiles can have different retention as well as attraction rates for parasitoids from plant to plant. A herbivore may be more conspicuous on one plant versus another, and leaf architecture and things like that can play a role in how conspicuous that plant, that herbivore is on the plant. Parasitoids have been shown to have density-dependent foraging depending on the plant that they're feeding upon. The presence or absence of other herbivores could also play a role in this differential parasitism. Low-quality host may affect the development on different host plants, and we know that if herbivores are spending, especially in our case when we're looking at a Lepidopteran larva, if they're spending a long time developing, they're certainly more vulnerable to parasitism over that long period of time. And last but not least, host plant can definitely play a role, potentially play a role in the effects on resistance, so their immune defense or their immune response. What I'm going to focus today is specifically on the host plant's role on immune response or resistance. So my objective was to examine the effect of host diet on immune defense, specifically encapsulation capacity using cohort as a covariate. So a little bit about encapsulation, if you're not familiar with it, is that it is a basic cellular response that something like a larva has to any foreign material that's inside of them. So if they can't, if they, a particle or whatever that is inside of them is small enough, it can be removed by phagocytosis, but if it's a larger particle or a thing like an egg, then what happens is these hemocytes basically build up on the cell. So here's a normal, or on the egg, so here's a normal healthy egg, and as you can see, hemocytes begin to build up on the egg. They eventually can surround the egg, and then they essentially blacken and melanize. And what it does is it suffocates that egg and allows no oxygen or nutrients to come in. But our lab actually doesn't work on encapsulation, so I was in need of a way to learn how to do this technique, because we're more basically an ecology lab. So I was lucky enough to have my advisor, Pedro Barbosa, send Astrid and I down to Tulane University in New Orleans to learn how to do this technique. So we initially started to learn this technique with some initial sampling, and then we moved on to the real work, where we learned a technique that was originally was introduced by Hu et al., but we learned a modified version from the actual creator of the modified version, Angelos Mlanic. And basically, it's a technique that measures color obscured by blackened hemocytes. So what we did was we used recently molted fourth instar larvae, and you inject a certain number of beads. We did 15 to 20 of these latex beads, very, very tiny beads, into the caterpillar. And these beads are dyed red for both visibility and also for the measurement. The larvae feed for 24 hours, giving them some time to encapsulate. And then these beads are dissected out. You can see here on the bottom, this is what one of a dissected red bead looks like. There's one of us dissecting it out. And you measure the saturation or intensity of red using imaging software. And here's sort of an example of what kind of software we use. So you can look at particular beads and measure them. And what I want you to notice is that in the measurement range, a high number, something like 225, means it's mostly red, and that means not encapsulated, while a low number means that it's mostly black, and so it is encapsulated. And then we used analysis for the measurements. We used PROC-GLM and SAS. Just to back up a little bit and give you some background about our particular species, the one I'm focusing on is a Limantriid. You may know it by its infamous sister species, the gypsy moth. But this is a very charismatic punk rock caterpillar, and we have a lab colony that we've collected from box elder. It's polyphagous, numerically dominant in our system, and it has a very high percent parasitism. We use two tree species, box elder, Acer nigundo, and black willow, Salix nigra, and they are very different species in morphology, bud burst, phenology, architecture, as well as the habitat that we collected them from. I used five cohorts in this preliminary study, about 5 to 10 individuals. I started with an egg mass, and I took that egg mass and split the offspring of that egg mass onto both host plants, the willow and the box elder. So this is the results. And to sort of orient you a little bit, remember that encapsulation capacity is a little bit counterintuitive here. The high numbers mean that there is low encapsulation capacity, while the low numbers here means high encapsulation capacity. So low is good. Okay. So here on this graph, these are the host plants, and this is the encapsulation capacity. What you can see is that willow has a higher encapsulation capacity. And it's significant, a very significant higher encapsulation capacity when they're feeding on willow relative to feeding on box elder. Once again, same kind of graph. We have box elder here and willow over here. And if you look, you can see that we have a distribution here, a variation of encapsulation. And all these points here represent mean cohort. So the encapsulation capacity of that cohort, the mean of that cohort. So this would be the cohort from mom number 23. And here's her encapsulation capacity on willow, or the individuals on willow. And what I want you to notice is that you can see that on box elder, there's very little variation, and so it was not significant variation. They basically all encapsulated about the same on box elder. But on willow, there was significant difference. Not only were they encapsulating better than box elder, but they were encapsulating very different from each other. So the genotype made a difference here, and there was a significant interaction between the cohort and the host plant. So just to wrap it up, we saw that there was an encapsulation capacity of larvae fed on box elder occurs at the same level independent of cohort. So cohort doesn't seem to matter for the individuals on box elder. But encapsulation capacity of larvae fed on willow occurs at different levels dependent on cohort. Cohorts on willow seem to demonstrate more variation, and it seemed to matter what cohort they came from. This provides some evidence that host plant influences herbivores' vulnerability to parasitoids with respect to immune defense. This is really exciting for our lab because we have had this evidence of differential parasitism on oak and willow and never really known what is a possible mechanism behind that differential parasitism. So this may be the possible mechanism behind it. So it means that if this holds up, that they may be actually being parasitized at the same level. So herbivores on both plants may be parasitized at the same level, but actually the willow caterpillars are actually encapsulating better, and so it appears that they have lower parasitism. And it supports other studies that have looked at diets and effects on immune response, and differential immune response may play a role in host-associated differentiation of herbivores. And lastly, we're just broadening our studies on encapsulation so we can collect populations from both box elder and willow, including life history measurements to see maybe if there's a trade-off between growth, development, and encapsulation capacity. Investigating also whether we see the same patterns in the genetic differentiation on hosts compared to these phenotypic differences on the host. And lastly, I'd like to thank these people, and particularly Angela Smolanich, for helping me out and helping Astrid and I learn the technique and taking time out of her busy research schedule. And thank you so much.